Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin is out on adventure today, and he'll be back next week. We have another special guest with us next week, and we'll be checking in with Justin at that time. Hopefully everybody is having a safe COVID-19 May here on May 18th, 2020. I know some segments of the country are opening up again gradually, and down here in the Lone Star State, that appears to be happening with the businesses opening and things at 25% capacity. And so just a trying time for everybody nationwide as we try to get back up on our feet and move forward economically as a country. So prayers to everybody out there, and hope you're doing well. And you can always contact us for assistance or some ideas. We've gone over a lot of ideas and resources for small companies, et cetera. So I know Justin has a repository of good ideas. Well, today we have a wonderful co-host who's been my co-host here several times. And as we kind of divert our attention today to our federal prison revenue stream, Federal Prison Authority, the chief consultant of Federal Prison Authority on the line is Mr. Jose Santana. Jose, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bruce. Thank you for having me. Hope everybody is staying safe during this trying times. We try to get back to some sense of normalcy, So thank you for having me, Bruce. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, always. Thank you. Feelings mutual. Well, we have been in some unprecedented historic times. Also, we may be getting some callers today, Jose. I sent up a flare on one of the Facebook streams. Anyway, this is unprecedented times where we have individuals that are incarcerated in prisons, and some of the prisons, many of them, the majority of the prisons are okay in the federal system. However, there is a percentage of the prisons that aren't okay in terms of their overall infection rate. And I know in the news, Elkton, Ohio, Fort Worth, Oakdale, Louisiana, Lompoc, but now on the rise. I think I said Fort Worth, but perhaps on the rise. Lexington and some others are on the rise. Arkansas may be on the rise a little bit. We'll see. So we have a lot of family members that call that are rightly concerned about their loved ones. And in the past, we had talked about some of the criteria that the Bureau of Prisons was using to let folks go on home detention, home confinement, and then eventually be picked up by the halfway house, etc. And I know that goalpost was moving quite a bit. The criteria would change on one end or both ends, then mix in the infection rate of the particular institution. If there's even a need to pull out, if there's nobody infected, why would you want to leave a safe environment of a prison and go into a more at-risk environment into the community if you were coming from a place where there was little to no infection? So anyway, so that's been a source of frustration for our clients and a frustration. I'll speak for myself, for me, because we get frustrated because our clients are frustrated, and then the system is frustrated because, say what you want about the folks in the Bureau of Prisons, but they're working super, super hard. They're trying the best they can do to deal with this. Nobody saw this coming. To have plans and resources and contingency plans to maintain an orderly operation of an institution would be very trying in an institution where there was a significant infection rate. So we'll have a little discussion here about some of the implications of COVID, and then later on in our show, we'll talk about the pattern risk assessment instrument, and we'll talk about the pros and cons. But I think what we do want to do is give at least a cursory first glance of the 15 items that are in the MAIL pattern risk assessment. It won't be an exhaustive review. You won't be able to get your master's in criminal justice or anything like that because of our show today, but at least we'll probably be the first show and the first people to talk about the pattern risk assessment score from the BOP pattern risk assessment score in a public venue. So we're excited to be trailblazers in that regard. Well, Mr. Santana, what are your thoughts? I guess tell our folks, you know, what some of your insights are about COVID and implications for the future. What are some of your thoughts?
Well, you very well spoke about what we're doing, Bruce, on the COVID-19 home confinement releases for the Bureau of Prisons. You know, given the situation and some of those various facilities and sites that you mentioned, and, you know, in response to the guidance provided by the Attorney General, those directives that were issued to the Bureau of Prisons, then the Bureau of Prisons, you know, it was March 26th when this first Attorney General Barr's memo came out. And the Bureau immediately began reviewing cases. I was very pleasantly surprised that the Bureau started looking so quickly at those cases, particularly at the select sites that were very much being brutally hit by this, like Oakdale, Elkton, those facilities that inmates died quickly out of this thing. So they started looking at those inmates and determining, reviewing all those inmates that had the COVID-19 risk factors, as described by the Center for Disease Control and those guidelines that the Attorney General put out on 26th. Then came April 3rd quickly, and they expanded the guidance and the directives given to the Bureau, instructing them to prioritize home confinement as a measure for to release those inmates that had that were asymptomatic, that had the risk factors. So the Bureau has placed over 2,300 inmates, last I recall, in home confinement. So they've done a pretty good job. Our dealings have been very stressful, have been very frustrating. We have had successes in some, but I want to repeat one thing, Bruce, that some people that have called us that were, you know, anxious about their loved ones that really didn't meet some of the criterias were very frustrated and very, very angry. Some of them were very angry because they thought we were offering things that we couldn't. And I want everybody to know that we can't decide what the Bureau is going to do. We just advocate and provide guidance and talk to our contacts to keep us informed of what they could tell us to help the loved ones of those that are retaining our services. We're not saying that we can get them and get them on home confinement and get them on expedited release and expedited this and that. We expedite the review of the case on our side and let them know where they could fall and try to give them a measure of qualification based on what the Bureau is generally doing. So I want to make that statement that we're not the ones that are making the decisions for the Bureau of Prisons. And you and I, we're in the same page on that, Bruce, because there have been some conversations out there that we were asking them to, that we were going to move them up in the list, and we were going to put them on the list, and we were going to just do this and that. And really, it's up to the Bureau of Prisons and the case managers working with the unit teams and the regional offices to get those inmates moved on. It's an application they fill out. So they have to fill the criteria for some of those. Some inmates that have been symptomatic, that have the risk factors, are more easier than those challenging ones that have no conditions at all, that are healthy, care level ones, and classified care level ones per the Bureau of Prisons, and that are young inmates and have 4 or 5 years still to complete. And we have been dealing with is that the average inmate that leaves has had some pre-existing medical condition, over 50, and has a year or less to serve. So we have had some inmates that are already at home and that have about a year or less, give or take. Some of the ones that have more than that have been a little bit more challenging. They're still on the bubble. They're still being looked at and reviewed. And we're waiting for the decision to happen. Right now, we have an inmate that releases this week, another one that releases next week that were approved and that are over 50 and have done a significant amount of time and release in 2021. So that's what we have been dealing with. Some of the ones that have 4 or 5 years have been much more challenging. Those that have no conditions, that are healthy, like I said, care level ones, medically, those are much more difficult to have them looked at and reviewed. Actually, they're still in contention, but they are priority. Another thing that we have faced, Bruce, is looking at the pattern risk assessment. If the pattern risk assessment is more than a low, they will not be prioritized. Even inmates that are pattern risk lows are looked at probably in the second or third wave, like you and I call it, Bruce. So that's what we've been looking at. The pattern risk cases that are assessed a minimum pattern risk are usually the ones that have been prioritized, and the Bureau has done a pretty good job looking at those. We've had some cases, Bruce, that, as you very well know, tested positive. Some of them in the Southeast region, one of them here in the South Central region. And those are still not even being considered. They're still looked at still medically because they have a significant amount of time. One of them has 10 years as a non-U.S. citizen. Then another one has over 5 years, and he's in a medium security facility. So those cases are just much challenging. The factors are just different for those and are significant risk, like the one in the medium is a pattern risk medium, and the one at the low is a pattern risk low because he's non-U.S. citizen, has significant amount of time still. So generally speaking, the Bureau has done a fairly decent job. It's been challenging, it's been chaotic. What we found out, each institution has different ways of looking at cases. But generally speaking, they have been trying to do what's right. But it's been very challenging because of the fact that institutions or staff have dwindled. Staff are out because they're sick or they shouldn't report to work, or they're working. Some of them are working from home if they can, because they are high fevers and things like that. It's been a challenging time for the Bureau of Prisons, that's for sure. But it has been very chaotic, very frustrating. Families are very, very much worried and anxious to get their loved ones out of those institutions. particularly those that are have significant high volumes of cases that are positive, such as Fort Worth, Butner, Elkton, those facilities, Lompoc. And so that's what, in a nutshell, Bruce, that's what I could recall.
Because you can't you can't really scale it. You know, it's some places, you know, that one gentleman we have, and he's, gosh, he's in his 70s, mid-late 70s, and he's still waiting. Whereas if that gentleman in his mid-late 70s was at another place, he might have been out way long time ago. We've had many successes, and I want to talk, I mean, just do some geography of some of the successes. You know, Iowa, North Carolina. What other states come to mind? We got people on home confinement now on the East Coast.
The Northeast, East
Boston.
Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Boston, yes, sir. Northeast is about one to come out this week. And
that's right.
Come on next week.
Yeah. That's right. We got some.
But we have had one that's been there waiting and still being reviewed since April 9th. So just imagine. I mean, it's been tough. It's been tough. The only thing that's happening, and he's over 70, that gentleman that you mentioned, Bruce. Yeah. And the fact is, he's got about, give or take, a little bit over 3.5 years to serve yet. So that's the issue.
Yeah, I think we need to, you know, talk about the moving goalposts.
Yes.
You know, people were kind of focused on one end or the other, you know, like, oh, well, my loved one's nonviolent, this and that, and has served over 50% of his sentence. Yeah, but you got to look at the other side, you know, how much is left, you know what I mean? And if there are three or more years left on a fairly hefty federal prison sentence, well, that's great that you got 50%. But if you're still looking at late 2002 and beyond, then it, you know, statistically just gets rougher.
Well, we have a case now that we've been working from the beginning where all this pandemic started, and it's been the most challenging case we've had, Bruce. He was being reviewed, he was denied, then he was denied again, and now he's being reviewed by the home confinement committee, but he has underlying health conditions stated, and those are risk factors stated by CDC, you know, and not that they don't stand a chance, but they should be looked at. The Bureau has looked at them, but the individual has almost 4 years to serve, and he has served about 32% of his sentence. So, you know, that's the issue here. They're holding him to that standard of that 25% or 18 months or less, which is really hard if you look at it when the individual has lung diseases and breathe with a nebulizer and one of those inhalers he uses daily, and has been diagnosed, and it's in his pre-sentence report that he has a lung disease, you know? So it's been challenging, and folks get frustrated because of that, and here goes what you say, that moving at the goalpost, you know, that's one individual that you really, really want to look at and probably prioritize. The fact is that there are other factors there, like the institution doesn't have a significant amount of, I mean, I don't think it has one case of COVID. I think maybe one or two staff members tested positive, but no inmates, Bruce, at that facility. So that's one of the issues that's being looked at also, the gravity of the situation at those places is being considered by the CEO.
Right. And even for folks that may be on the fence, right? They may not be a clear deny. And they may not be a clear, there's a COVID committee. And so, you know, somebody outside of the local institution reviews that case and then makes a decision on high. So that way, the more eyes that look at a particular inmate's case, the more validity, to the decision.
Absolutely.
And so here, the other, I want to talk about two other concepts here. For those of us that have taken statistics and or math models or even fit, this is almost like a physics equation. Okay, so, you had the first wave of releases, the second wave, and there'll be perhaps subsequent waves. So as they kind of go through all the eligible people, and if the COVID emergency continues in a particular area, now this is going to get cut geographically. I see this coming, I can see them saying, okay, the following states, boom, boom, boom. You know what I mean? But these other higher risk areas, oh, I shouldn't say states, but facilities, right? Anyway, so, and then lastly, we got to think about, okay, everybody's trying to go out on home confinement, which 95% of those cases, if not more, are run by a halfway house or a federal halfway house or a residential reentry center. Well, can't you imagine that all those beds are just strained? In other words, they're at 100+% capacity, having to put more people on home confinement, which stresses the RRC workers because that way they have to do more job checks and home checks, right? Oh,
yeah.
And also, ladies and gentlemen, these RRCs aren't BOP institutions. This isn't the 80s where we had the community treatment centers. These are outsourced to private companies whose bottom line is a profit. And a lot of that bottom line is in staffing. So, I mean, if they can't handle the load and they can't handle the supervision, they're not going to give the bed space. Right? So, There are people in federal prison that might otherwise qualify had there been a bed space available to them that's not available to them because the people in front of them in the crisis from all over the United States, right? Even that little halfway house in Des Moines, Iowa, or whatever. Man, there's people coming out of Duluth, people coming out of the other Sandstone, people coming out of other places, KC, whatever. And crunching this little bitty, this is just an example, small
Milan.
Midwestern. Yeah. Okay. And so they're, the BOP, this and that, I can't get my loved one out. Well, if there isn't a bed for them to go out to, they can't get out.
Right.
And those crisis furloughs, the crisis furlough is rare, but it's a furlough where, the warden is in effect saying, I'll let you go to your house on my count until your RRC bed kicks in. Well, you were executive staff, Jose. I mean, how many guys you want on your count sitting at their house, man? I mean, you know what I mean? That makes me nervous.
Zero, none. There was rare when a crisis furlough was granted and the individual had to be a community custody inmate, minimum community. And sometimes they're going out on an escorted trip. I took some inmates out who were community custody on escorted trip because the warden, wanted a staff member with that inmate on the community. So. That's how rare those are granted. Those are granted very much rarely.
Very, very rare, very rare. So let's wrap up this portion of the show in that.
Yes, sir.
Our clients to advocate for them and help structure and even facilitate very strategic communications with decision makers in front and behind the scenes to And that changes institution by institution. So this is something that's been a challenge for us, a personal and professional challenge in a good way. You and I have always stepped up to challenges over the years, and we continue to do so as civilians. I feel like we run our own regional office, doesn't it?
Wow. Yeah, it's tough.
I think you said we've had days that we felt like, dang, man, we worked harder today than we did when we were managing whatever 100,000 inmates that day, right? So anyway, folks, yeah, just, you know, see us on our Facebook page. First Step Act Federal Prison Reform is our Facebook page. It's wide open to the public. It's Googleable. Send a request and we'll let you be a member of that marvelous resource, because it has everything, every policy, every memo, has the pattern risk score, has all the criteria, all of it is in there for your knowledge and understanding. So, by the way, we cleared 2,000 members, Jose, this morning. So of that Facebook page. So thank you. Thank you to everybody who's been a member, and we've done that with no advertising, no hype or anything. People understand the level of information that they receive from the site and the quality of it. Let's face it, you know, I mean, how many other consultants are in the position that we are? All right. So moving along, one of the criteria that's crucial to COVID-19 releases, but also moving forward into the next millennium, is going to be something called the pattern risk score. And the pattern risk score is an attempt by what the Hudson Institute, other think tank operators and researchers that has now been blessed and ordained by the Federal Bureau of Prisons to kind of, they used a meta-analysis of all kinds of psychopathic, antisocial, criminogenic studies and boiled down to 15 items. That's right, 15 items that every inmate, or at least every male inmate, will be scored on. And then an index score will be made on the inmate. And then their risk assignment will follow. Now, you know, there's custody and classification. This pattern risk score, I think, is more of a tool for the First Step Act, right? Because it includes two of the items, several of the items have kind of First Step Act programming entries, okay, yeah. Of which, ladies and gentlemen, all right, January 15th, 2020 is when where the starting line is, okay? So a lot of these folks that, oh, my loved one did this and that and the other, it may or may not count toward the pattern risk. So another caveat here is that this is very subjective, even though it looks objective, it's very subjective. And I think as we go through some of the items, we'll underscore some of the subjectivity that can get in there. So
absolutely.
Let's look at a couple of the current age.
You know, I just want to make one comment. You know, this is based on the male pattern risk scoring of the pattern risk assessment tool. Is based on the R&R model. What it is the risk, needs, and responsivity of the inmate. That's what this is all about. And, you know, the Bureau has already a tool which was being used. They just wanted to expand this to quantify some things and make it a little bit more objective, but really is very subjective, like you very well said, Bruce. And like I'm saying, even though it has that 15 items, is interpreted based on what the unit team sees and the programs they assign to the inmate. So And this is based on the custody classification form. Anybody that's been in the Bureau of Prisons and knows the classification system, this is what it's based out of. Some expanded areas, like, you know, the work programs completed, time served since last incident report. Those are expanded areas, you know. So because the incident report, it's one of the indicators, one of the most significant indicators for predicting recidivism. So age and discipline inside a secure facility, that's one of the most significant factors for predicting recidivism. So that's, I just wanted to make that comment.
Great comments. So let's kind of go through what we can here. Current age. Okay, so that's you can't, there's no subjectivity there. So obviously the older the better, right? I mean, bottom line,
yes,
in terms of a risk equation. So current age. All right. And again, that's why we have greater than 60 years of age would be the first preference on COVID releases, because that equals a general risk score of zero for that one item. All righty then. Number two, Walsh, Adam Walsh with conviction. So that speaks to sex offenses and Walsh reviews. Each sex offender goes through a Walsh review for civil commitment if it's a fairly egregious contact offense. Do you have any comments on number two, Mr. Santana?
Number one and number two are both. See, as you go by in category and ages, the number goes up. So the younger, the higher the risk as a general score.
Yes.
And so on watch with conviction, this is quantified here. But don't think that because there is no conviction, the individual has no public safety factor of sex offense. That's a big mistake people make. Watch with conviction, yes or no, that's a fact. That's clear. There's no subjectivity there. But that doesn't mean that if the individual has no conviction, it doesn't mean that he's not a sex offender. You follow me, Bruce?
Absolutely.
Because the individual could have no conviction and no watch and still is a sex offender because of the conduct that happened. There's no need for a conviction to have a public safety factor of sex offender. Want to make that point because we get that question a lot.
Now, will that sex offender show in history of violence, or is that separate on number six? Let me just jump right
there. Not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily need to be violent because
he could have possessed
child pornography, and the case was like, you know, changed to a lesser degree of assault of a minor or something like that. But the underlying offense was possession of sexual material with a minor, you know?
Right.
So still that public safety factor applies.
Okay. Got it. Number three, violent offense. Obviously, if you know, if it's a no, it's a zero. But if there is a violent offense, that's 5 points right there. 5 points. Any comments on that?
Yep. I mean, that's clear cut. Is a yes or no? It's yes, 5 points. It doesn't matter the kind of violence. It's 5 points.
Right. Yeah, and we get the 924 or 922 or 924C, 922Gs, and we have these other discussions. We don't have to do that just yet. Okay. Criminal history points. Now, this is found in the pre-sentence report. And obviously, 0 to 1 criminal history point is a score of 0, but it goes up pretty sharply. 2 to 3 points is an 8. 4 to 6 points is 16. 7 to 9 points is 24. 10 to 12 points is 32. Greater than 12 is a score of 40. Wow. Okay, then. A lot of emphasis given on the criminal history points. What are your thoughts on that as a case manager?
Yeah, that's, you know, the criminal history point is vital. The more history, well, of course, the higher the score, which you know, it goes up in intervals of 8 points. So it's pretty significant, you know, pretty significant.
Very, absolutely. History of escapes. Oh, go ahead. Anything else on criminal history?
Same thing with that item, the history of escapes item, you know.
Right.
246. 246 goes up in intervals of two, but the fact is that here, a history of escape, if you have serious escape, any serious escape, it don't matter if it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, serious escape would keep anybody at least with a public safety factor of escape history, which will have the consequences of keeping somebody at least at a medium, no less than a medium security facility, you know, right, with a serious escape history. So,
okay. Could they do 15, 20 years on their bit and get to a low or what? Or not?
They can.
Okay. Yeah.
What all I right. call scale down or graduate down.
Yeah. But that's a good point. All right, moving along. History of violence. Boy, is that subjective or what? You know, we have a lot of people out. Well, they didn't get charged with it, or you know, he beat up his girlfriend, but it was her fault or whatever. You know what I mean? History of violence. Greater than 10 years, minor is 1. Greater than 15, serious 2. 5 to 10 years, minor 3. 10 to 15 years, serious 4. Less than 5 years, minor is a 5. 5 to 10, serious is a 6. And less than 5 years, serious is a 7. So this goes up by 1 year in each violence bracket category.
Right. And so here the thing here is the severity of the violence and the recency. Of course, the more recent, the more it hurts in the point system. But the fact is that this is very subjective based on narratives contained in pre-sentence reports. That's why it's important to have clear narratives of depicting what happened in prior cases, you know. And this is where a lot of the PSRs get really, really dicey. They're not clear on what happened in previous occasions, and it leaves it to the interpretation of the professional looking at it, you know, the case managers scoring the classifications.
Absolutely. The next item, number 7, is education score. Now, no education, 0. But if you're at least enrolled in a GED program, you get minus 2. And if you have a high school degree and beyond, you get 4 points reduced. So education can offset some of the other negative things.
Another item, that number 7 education score, another item that leads to subjectivity because of what's written in the PSR. Again, the narratives contained in the PSR. The PSRs don't indicate if the individual had a completed high school, didn't complete, didn't finish, has a GED, and many times they don't verify. It needs to be verified.
Verified education, right. Because that's,
yes.
And that's a two-point situation right there in the PSR.
So, oh, yeah. That could make a difference between a minimum and a low and a medium. Yeah,
it sure can. And that's one of the things that you and I are always really quick to identify with our new clients that retain us early on in their process before the PSR is finalized, is to make sure that education component is on point and correct. All right.
This one or the next one?
All right. Yes, indeed. All right, what we got here? Number 8 is drug program status. Okay. So there's residential and non-residential. Okay, so there's no drug stuff, 0. Non-residential drug programming complete is a 3-point reduction. So folks, you know, a lot of times guys wouldn't take non-residential drug programming because they were butthurt that they couldn't get into RDAP and they couldn't get the year off. So they decided to say, screw it, I'm not going to do shit. Well, not under the First Step Act. You better look at doing some non-residential drug programming. And hopefully drug education, I think, counts to that. That gets you minus three. That'd be lovely. And then if you are qualified for RDAP and you get in and you complete it, you get some minus six. Now, let's say you're not a drug offender at all and you have no history. Let's say you're just a fraudster, somebody that just didn't have an alcohol or drug history. That's minus nine. So obviously having that alcohol or drug history was a risk component, and not having it is a minus nine, which is huge. You know, I mean, Jose and I have seen some clients that had like a negative 10 pattern score. And at first I was like, Jesus Christ, how'd the person get to be a negative, you know, on their pattern score? And if it's some of these white collar folks or that are educated and have no drug history and have no violence and, you know, are old, man, that score is going to shoot way down. And that's a good thing. Thoughts
negative
there, Mr. 32, Tim?
Like one negative 32, like one client we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have no drug history or no alcohol abuse, no drug abuse, no nothing, you get a minus nine, which is good. It's significant. It takes you how significant.
Yeah. If I did, I can atone for it within 3 points by taking RDAP and possibly getting a year off. So anyway. All right. One of my favorite categories, number nine, incident reports. And you talk about 120 months. So that's quite a stretch there. So if you have zero incident reports, zero, and just kind of goes up from there, one, two, and greater than two, you get 3 points. Interestingly, one of the criteria under the COVID program was clear conduct for 1 year.
Clear conduct for 1 year, absolutely. And it didn't matter if it was a 300, a 400, 200, or 100. They're sticking it to it, to the 1 year. That was the expanded guidance that was put out.
That's right.
And you know, significant it is incident reports, which is misconduct or discipline issues that are contained within the prison walls, that you get a discipline incident, what they call a shot, an incident report. There's four categories, Bruce, from item 9 to item 12.
Yeah, all dealing with incident reports. Good point. That's how important incident reports are. So we have all incident reports, if not an item 9. Number 10 talks about serious incident reports. Now, do you know what the cut is? I mean, is a 206 or a 220 fight? I mean, is that going to be considered serious, or this is just 100 series? Like,
serious incident reports is 200 and 100.
Okay. All two and 100. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And folks, some of your loved ones out there that got caught with that cell phone, and that doesn't sound serious to you, that sometimes that's a 108, right, Mr. Santana?
Not sometimes, all the time. It was,
I just tested
it was enhanced
all the time.
To a 108. A 108 is, imagine this. I always put this example to the folks that contact us. A 108 is seven points down from a 100, a 101, which is attempted killing. 100 is killing. So 108, imagine that category inside a prison. A telephone is a serious business, and there are so many of them. So many individuals contact us about their loved ones having a 108. They're going to get transferred. This and that. Yeah, it's a serious business, and cell phones are just, unfortunately, something that's happening out there, and inmates are getting jammed up because there's many things that could happen with a phone inside a prison. They continue their business, illegal businesses, things happen. Actually, one of my lieutenants
in Puerto Rico got killed because of a cell phone. So that's how serious that is, and they'll stick it to you. And a 100 incident report stays 10 years in your custody classification.
That's a good point. All right, we got 5 minutes left here. Number 11 is time since last incident report. We alluded to that. So if you've been 1 month, 1 year clear conduct, post your last incident report, regardless of the series of shot, that's a zero. So that's a good thing. You know, that's a good thing. That's a good way to get a zero. Time since last serious incident report. So if you had one, and it had been a year, that's another opportunity to get a zero. But if you've had a serious incident report, it could stick with you for that full year with some extra points.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Here again. Yep. Here in the incident reports, Bruce, is what I always mention when I train people in custody classification. Got to look at recency and severity. That's what's going to hurt. The more the recent and the more serious incident reports, that's what's going to hit you harder in the pattern risk assessment.
Good point. Good point. And last is the FRP, the Financial Responsibility Program. I couldn't think of a better now. If you refuse to participate, you're going to get a point. But if you participate in FRP, you'll get a zero. And Ms. Santana, tell our listeners generally what the FRP is.
Financial Responsibility Program. That's what FRP stands for. Financial Responsibility Program. Anybody that has obligations to pay fines, restitution, court and post financial obligations, like assessments. If you don't pay your assessments, you've got to pay them inside the prison walls. Well, that's what the Financial Responsibility Program. Very important to pay your financial responsibilities up front. If you can, get rid of them as quick as possible, because if not, they're going to make you a payment plan, and they're going to gather anything above $375 that you collect, including your payments from your work or Unicor, anything that your family sends you. They're going to make a formula, and every 6 months they're going to evaluate it to make a payment commensurate with your income in prison to make your financial responsibility obligations getting them paid. So if you refuse, you don't get no more than $5.25 a month from payment. That's what's called maintenance pay. You don't want that. You want to have your FRP obligation, your financial responsibility program obligations on time, pay them, monthly at least, or get them paid as quick as possible if you can.
Excellent. Excellent. Nice overview there. Perfect. Well said. Last two are programs completed. So if you programming is always important in federal prison. I know some of the prisons have more programs than others. That is a factor. That's an issue. But if you've completed one program, you get -2, 2 to 3 programs, -4 points, 4 to 10 programs, -6 points, greater than 10 points, you get 8 points reducted, and it caps at 10 programs. A lot of folks with long sentences can easily do 10 plus programs. Last entry is number 15, work programs. Now, the work programs vary by institution, depends on the work detail, the work assignment, or whatever. But if you have one work program that qualifies, -1, and greater than one work program is -2 points. So we have 1 minute left. Any final thoughts on the pattern risk overview? Quick glance.
And programs completed are the programs assigned by the unit team during unit team classification, or those that the inmate volunteers to take on his leisure time, or the programs that he's assigned besides the work programs. You've got to keep in mind that minimum security facility, the camps, are work facilities, so there's not as much programming going on, but a lot of work goes on out there in the minimum security facility. So yeah, you scored all those, the sum of all those columns, and it gives you your total score of your pattern risk. And then, the overall male pattern risk level will come out depending on that. I don't have to cut points right now, but I think it's 0 to
Is it
0 to 11, I think it is. Bruce.
Or minimum?
0 to 11 or 12. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's real good. So,
But we need to talk in another occasion on the cut points. That's one thing that we have.
We'll get some guidance on that later.
We ran out of time right here.
Ran out of time.
Another hour.
At least you have an explanation, a verbal explanation of what this is at a glance. In that way, people just don't blow into it and thinking they can score their loved one, which I see all the time. I scored my loved one and he's a negative 1 million. Like, let's look at the pre-sentence report and some other stuff. And have the case. Yeah, they run other sentry screens and figure out otherwise. Well, Mr. Santana, thanks for coming on the show today. Pleasure. I
appreciate it, Bruce. Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Man, you're just always just a wealth of information. And I know I'm glad to be associated with you, and our clients are lucky to have such a high caliber individual advocating for them. All right then. So with that, have a great week, everybody, and come see the site at federalprisonauthority.com, and you can see the services that are offered there. Also, our YouTube channel at First Step Act, pictures of myself and Jose on that channel. So with that, we'll bid everybody a good week. Stay safe, stay COVID-free, and we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.